Hey, this is Jeff from the Extraordinary Us podcast. I am so excited to talk about the future. Here we go. A short disclaimer, though, before we talk about the future. We are not, myself nor any of my guests, are giving any investment advice. If you do anything we say, you are likely to lose all of your money. This is not investment advice. We are talking about the future. We are theorizing of where things may go. We're talking about cryptocurrency and other very speculative and whatever currencies. So please do not take anything that we say as a recommendation at all. This is for informational purposes only. Happy learning.
You know, part of my fascination with crypto comes from my finance background and the fascination with the roles of markets and the economic side of it, right? And now you have code doing a lot of these things, and it's super exciting.
This is Jeff Burningham, and welcome to the Extraordinary Us podcast, where we talk to people you may or may not have heard of that are making it happen. Before we jump in today, and again, we're continuing our series on the future. It's early 2022. I've been thinking a lot about the future for the last couple of years based on a project that I've been working on. And so I'm bringing futurists, technologists, crypto experts in to talk about the future. And I'm excited to have one of those with me today, a friend of mine. Let me remind you of the tenets of the podcast before we get started. Number one, no matter our differences, and we are all different in so many ways, we always have a lot more alike and in common than we do different. Let's build from common ground. Number two, because of that, let's exercise more compassion. Less comparison, less competition, more compassion for each other. We are fellow travelers. Life is not easy for anyone. And number three, too often we let mistakes of the past or fear for an unknown future, which is what we're going to be talking about today, cloud our judgment and cause us to make bad decisions. Let's act in faith. Let's go forward with a positive attitude and let's make good things happen. Again, I'm excited to have a friend of mine, Paul Weimer, in the studio with me today.
How's it going, Jeff?
Paul, how you doing?
Good, good.
Hey, Paul and I have been friends for a couple of years now. I think shortly after I went out of the governor's race, we met.
Yep.
We started talking about crypto. Paul is a great guy. I would call him like a finance and crypto genius. Paul, are you okay with that?
I'll go with just finance and crypto. We'll leave the genius thing,
leave the genius out.
The TBD on that.
So. Yeah, I love Paul. Paul's an expertise, has expertise in finance and crypto. He went to the London School of Economics. He currently runs a crypto hedge fund. And let me tell you how interesting this hedge fund was. Of course, after the governor's race, I was approached with every opportunity you could possibly imagine. I thought a little bit about joining Paul in this endeavor just because I was so impressed with you, Paul, honestly.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I'm so excited about crypto. Yeah. And so today we're going to talk about crypto. He runs a crypto hedge fund called Amelior.
Amelior.
Amelior. Where does that Weimer and well, Amelior, Paul, yeah. Where does that name come from?
It probably comes from me not being a marketing person or someone that's skilled at kind of branding. Amelior just is a Haitian Creole, I went there on my mission, word for improve. And to be honest, I wish there was some backstory, but it's kind of evolved over time. My new favorite thing is to tell people it's the fund is for intelligent people. So if you can't pronounce it, it might not be a good match for what you're
out.
To accomplish.
So, it is hard to pronounce,
for
but
sure.
I like that name.
Thanks.
So we're going to talk about crypto today.
Love it.
I think Paul is one of the guys in Utah that understands crypto the best that I've met. And let's start with the beginning, Paul. I kind of view this as a little bit of crypto 101. We've all heard of crypto. Let me tell a quick story. So I may or may not have been I was with a youth group yesterday talking to them. There were about 18 year olds talking about kind of what they wanted for Christmas. And one of the guys, this is a true story, one of 17 years old said, "All I want is crypto."
I like this
for
kid.
Christmas. And so then we started to talk about Web3 and DeFi and crypto and the metaverse for 10 minutes. And our kids are talking more about it. Let's go back to the basics, Paul, and maybe we can talk about how we talk to our kids about it. But let's go back to the basics of crypto and the blockchain, why this is going to be so transformative into the future for our world.
Yeah, I love that, because I actually think part of the problems that crypto face today is because we haven't found our wording and our language to talk about what Bitcoin really was and is.
Yeah.
And so I would frame it more as a technology. So let's move away from currency. Let's move away from like big gains and all that. And let's just talk about what this technology does, because I think it's really transformative.
And do you look at Bitcoin more as a technology than a currency?
I think what it was on the frontier of is actually a technological advancement in cryptography and in database management and how we organize ourselves in a data-driven world. Mm-hmm. And so its brilliance is it kind of brings all of that together, and it brings 30, 40, 50 years of academic research in both, you know, computer database management, cryptography, and it mixes it with a monetary kind of
component
story thesis mm-hmm. to incentivize operating this network. But at its core, what the cryptography does is it disintermediates. Okay.
Put a point on that.
Yeah.
At the core, what this does, the cryptography disintermediates
markets and lots of any type of, if we just at 10,000 feet, think of any type of service, like we're in a service economy, right? Like any type of service that requires a third party to facilitate a market. Okay. So we have financial examples of that. We have social media examples of that, right? So what does Facebook do? It allows people to connect, but it relies on them to do that, right?
Yep.
And so the advancement of cryptography and this database technology is it allows us to, instead of relying on a third party to do that, it allows us to do it through code and software, right?
Yeah.
And so everything that I'm excited about crypto and everything I think when I think of future looking has to do with that first principle is we're taking out market makers mm-hmm. for a variety of things.
You're taking out the middleman.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're implementing code. And with that comes pros and cons, right? So with code, you have permanence. Mm-hmm. You know, I've literally put money in things that unless the protocol is hacked, it can never come out, right? And so you have permanence, you don't have censorship in the same ways, because basically people write code that allows users to interact with it in a way that is permanent, that's not, it's immutable is a word we use a lot.
Yep.
But basically,
unless it's hacked, right? I mean, Paul, you said that a minute ago, like unless it's hacked. And I think that's part of what makes people scared is like, this can be hacked.
Yeah, it seriously can. I mean, I could, you know, part of the fun for me of being in it, you know, relatively early was that I got to experiment with some of these and the innovation and actually put my own money to work in some of these. And yeah, I got hacked.
You lost some money.
Oh yeah.
Everyone loses some money along the way.
Yeah. On the way in today, you know, we'll get to NFTs, but there was a bunch of people that had their Bored Ape Yacht Club NFTs stolen just this morning. Right.
Really?
So this is very real and it's a very legitimate risk that can be managed, right? And risk managed. But it also...
But I think it's scary. It keeps people out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that. And we can get into some of the things that have happened. Like there have been, you know, the industry's responded to that. It's matured, right?
Yeah, it's maturing.
So now any great project, and one of the things I always look at is, you know, what kind of bounties are offered for hacks, right? So there's this industry around making money from finding hacks, and there's hacks where people take all the money and then turn it back once they point out the bug and the problem. So it's been it's a riot to watch. But let's take a step back.
Okay.
So software or this cryptographic technology basically allows for software to make a market instead of third parties, right? So, and if that software, it comes in the form of a smart contract. It's a word you'll hear. But in reality, what it is it's a binding agreement between two parties, and it facilitates behavior, right? Interaction. And so it's not too difficult to, when this technology first came out, if you read books in like 2012, 13, they hypothesized a future where so much of what we know goes away because we have software to disintermediate, right? Yeah. We don't need companies to do the same things. We don't need, you know, and so now
and this is kind of the idea around Web3, right? Like totally. Decentralization, kind of putting the power back to the people. Instead of a couple of huge conglomerates owning our information, it's now about, I'll bring The Sovereign Individual, which is a book totally. You have to read. Like it's about the sovereignty of our individualism.
Right.
You know?
No, and I think this is both the breakthrough of cryptography and this revolution. It's also what makes institutions fearful. It's also makes individuals uniquely responsible for their future, right? I mean, yeah. Part of the reason I have a fund is because people won't put serious capital into something that they don't know how to do themselves, right? Yeah. And I support that, but this tech really does that. And to give you an example, my years working in London, I worked at Ernst & Young for 7 years, and my job was to value financial companies for tax purposes. So as part of that, I got to go in to big banks, insurance companies, asset managers that were operating everywhere in the world and really learn what they did. And so 3 years ago, when this decentralized finance world arose, I learned that all the things I saw big banks doing, insurance companies doing, really smart, clever people were writing code to accomplish the same goals. So going back to that disintermediation, right? So I'm a buyer, you're a seller. We need to go to an exchange to do that, mm-hmm. right? Now we have decentralized or code that individuals get to contribute to, and they have governance systems, and those are creating the market instead of traditional finance, right? And the pros, if we make it really simple, the pros are it's immediate settlement, right? Yeah. So that the software ensures that you get better rights, clarity. To your point, it puts more responsibility on the individuals to understand what they're doing. But you get that instantaneous, you cut out all the layers and all the bureaucracy. When I was in London, there were 7 million people who worked in the financial district. And probably 5.5 million of them did things that crypto solves the problem.
Yeah, for. Like compliance, and they were just proving right. transactions.
Or settlement. Right? I mean, I bet your listeners sometime in the last year, independent of how wealthy, busy they are, had to go in and talk to their bank about a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because it's settlement layers and you had to talk with the manager. Well, now that's like we have code that's doing that mm-hmm. in its place, right?
Yep.
And so that I want to go back to, that's what this technology brings. It puts individual responsibility on, but it really connects markets. And let's talk about.
And this is what's powerful, right? Because totally. This would spring us massively forward. Think of if a ledger, if there was, mm-hmm. which really blockchain, right, is an electronic ledger that the people, let's say us, we, own. Think if that settlement could be kind of happen instantaneously. Right. It could happen a lot cheaper, obviously, mm-hmm. hopefully.
We're getting there.
It would change everything, right? Or so much around the world of
right.
finance.
And let's go, you know, so 10 years on, or yeah, it was about 10 years when some of your first kind of financial contracts started to be written on these databases. Right. So people wrote a protocol that lets borrowers and lenders come together. Right. And my favorite story to tell people is the day I took out a $40,000 loan on my crypto portfolio that took 45 seconds. And the same day my wife is in for 3 hours talking to 6 people to get an under collateralized loan. Yeah. And right. So I think we have efficiencies, we have improvements. And that's why I go back to technology, right? Too many people right now think of Bitcoin as this volatile thing, right? They think of it But if you start thinking about it as something that creates markets in a more efficient manner, right? And let's move on. Let's talk about social media and some of these things where we rely, and this is Web 3 versus Web 2. So you're going to start to hear Web 3 everywhere, right? Yep. Web 3 is this idea in simplest terms that the individual can kind of control their own self, and that software can instead of going to like a Facebook or a Google to get information, you can control your information and interact with applications where it's a network and it's back and forth, and that the individual has rights to control that. And that's what people are building today, right? And so I'm probably getting a little ahead of myself, but if you think at 10,000 feet, anywhere where you need someone else to make a market in order to do something, we're replacing that with code. Right.
And you think that that's the main innovation of Bitcoin, you're saying?
So
like you're thinking of Bitcoin not in a currency perspective right now as you talk about it. You're thinking of it as in that main idea of the technological innovation. Would Ethereum, would other, you know, the problem is now there's thousands of cryptocurrencies. It's confusing to people, right? So do you look at other cryptocurrencies in that same regard? Or I know I'm jumping
ahead. No, I love this. So I take it. What I do is say, independent of what coin, what network, what, you know, any of this, what the cryptography breakthrough allows, I narrow down to four things. So the first is that disintermediation. It allows you and I to interact in a variety of ways directly through software instead of someone making the market for that. Okay. The second is it allows us to do it relatively private. Okay. So I can interact through my wallet address. I can even have an NFT that carries my own information, right? But you don't have to know me to do that.
Yeah. Good or bad?
It's both.
You know what I mean? Because we're used to doing with business with people we know, like, and trust. Yeah. It's hard to know maybe sometimes online who you're doing business with. It's good. It's both.
Yeah.
It broadens the market. Because you can do business with people you don't know, but it also, you don't know these people. You know, trust is an issue maybe.
Totally. And so, but you at least have this privacy layer that comes with it. You can interact through wallet addresses, through NFTs, and we'll get to that in a second. But you have this layer of privacy. But at the same time, the ledger you described is public. So you can get on the blockchain, a web explorer of the blockchain database, Bitcoin database, and you can see every transaction that's ever occurred since 2009 when it was launched, right?
Yeah.
So you have privacy, but also publicly verifiable things. Mm-hmm. So there isn't a question of what did I do? Like there is a ledger list of it, right? It's one of the misnomers in crypto is it's all just so private. Well, whoever's using those wallet addresses, there's a record of, and they're actually catching criminals and working with governments to stop that. So I think we can move past that kind of level.
I hope so.
And then the fourth thing is this extraterritorial aspect of the technology, right?
Yeah.
So we don't need, again, going back to disintermediation, we don't need a government, right, to do things like make money or to do other aspects. It's done through code and it is borderless. And so people can engage in this way. You'll appreciate
this. It sounds like a recipe for chaos,
right?
Well, which I love in some respects, but it's also scary, right?
You'll appreciate this because you're an investor yourself, right? Yeah. And you do angel investing, venture. I mean, 2 years ago, I found a protocol that someone had made up that basically allowed you to do Kickstarter in South Korea where people could upload things. And I was like, I actually could invest in mom and pop shops
in South Korea. Yeah.
It's cool. On a micro scale. And so what do you leave behind? You leave behind the Bank of International Settlements that allows us to change. So you see how the efficiencies come if you think about it as a technology. Mm-hmm. And if we get less scared, right? Like if we move past that the internet is for pornography and guns and drugs, then we start to see real, real value to the internet.
I thought that's what crypto was for.
Yeah, well, we are. That was 2012, and yeah. It's time to move forward. So, yeah. But those four characteristics, disintermediation, privacy, public, and then this extraterritorial aspect, cool. To me, summarize the tech. Now,
I love you breaking down those four because yeah. It's something that you can remember, right? And I love those are all powerful. Yeah. Go ahead.
So now we move forward, and 2018, people are like, wow, those four characteristics are really valuable in finance. And so they start to use code to make lending protocols, to make it so you can exchange two assets, right? And then it's more efficient, right? And so as someone who experimented in these early on, it's been amazing to watch them go. Things that I put money in that had like 100 million in it now have 25 billion in it. And all of those four characteristics hold true for it, for these protocols, right? And so I'm trading with someone, I can swap a crypto asset with someone in any part of the world, and I don't know who they are, right? And this is scary.
It is scary.
This is, but at the same time, it is more efficient.
Yeah,
right?
It is, for sure.
And so what do we know about innovation, right? Yeah. When it's an improvement, when it's more efficient, we get adoption. And it's so fun to, you know, our age, I don't know, I wasn't quite dialed into the internet, and I always regretted, like, here's this thing that happened that changed the world. And I'm like, I want.
Now you're in the middle of it.
Yeah,
and you're in your prime,
to be
and you're
part of this again. And so I think that's the tech, right? And then you work back to.
Can I ask two questions
ahead,
about
please,
that? Is that
for
okay?
Sure.
Paul?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about regulation. Because you spoke about it being extraterritorial.
Yeah.
And there's a really exciting company, you know, disclaimer, I was the first investor in it along with a couple others, but in TaxBit here in Utah that people may have heard of. They're really they're bringing regulation and or tax compliance around crypto transactions. So I'm going to ask a broad question and you can answer it however you want to or take it wherever you want to. Are you in favor of regulation for crypto or not? Because there's an argument saying you've got to regulate it in order for it to scale or become extra big. But then, of course, the whole idea of crypto is this kind of individual sovereignty, this freedom, this decentralization. So how does the crypto world look at or tackle regulation, Paul?
Well,
I know this is a huge question.
So going back to your opening, right? Like, people are different. And I think it's highlighted by the fact that I co-run the portfolio with Ryan Spencer, who is more of the libertarian kind of origins. And I'm pretty far left when it comes to politics, right? So I do think that there's a spectrum here. And so as someone who believes in the role of government in markets, I am supportive of things that protect us against fraud, that basically allow for more capital to flow into this new innovation, right? So I come with a little bit of a longer term belief in governments, not to get regulation right or perfect, but to get it well enough that we get the main goal. If you had asked me 2 years ago and regulators were just stumbling through this, they have gotten so much more informed. There are some real scary people if you're a crypto fan, but it's been fun to watch the political activation of a single issue voter, right? Like crypto voters.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I found myself like
this is
cheering for Ted Cruz and then wanting to just go in a closet and try and figure out who I am again, right? Like, so that's what this.
And by the way, this is real, people. I'm sitting at a basketball game last week. I have a very well-known, wealthy crypto friend here in Utah. I won't say his name, but come to me and say, like, I want to rally around this one candidate because of one issue, crypto, period.
Right.
And by the way, I want to bring to bear money that has never been seen in politics before because of crypto valuations and because of crypto wealth that's been created. So this is going to impact sooner rather than later. You may not be looking at it right now or thinking about it right now. This is going to impact politics here soon. And you have people, Paul, like you said, I didn't know that, and that's great. You lean kind of far left politically. You're rooting on Ted Cruz because he's fighting crypto, right?
I honestly might have you edit that part out because I just can't even say the words right because of where I'm
from. Are you okay if I don't edit it out?
No, of course
I kind of
not.
Have a strict non-edit policy.
For sure.
Until you, anyways, yeah.
Yeah, but you see my point is like, you know,
I love
like take someone like an Elizabeth Warren who is dogmatically against crypto. And taking it from a stance of protecting investors, right?
Yeah.
And here I am, who's your like a normal guy who got into something that has fundamentally changed my wealth and my future, right? Yeah. And I don't want to be protected from that.
Yeah. Like,
and then I look at, you know, kind of migrating back to kids, right? This is what they value and how they're going to invest.
Yeah.
Right. Your 17-year-old will never quite understand making 8% year on year in the stock market when he just pulled that in 30 seconds off a green wick, right? Like,
so, but can that last? Is that going to last? I mean, over time, this market will become much more efficient, and those kind of returns, I assume, won't last. Now, that's maybe a decade down the road or whatever.
Yeah, or those losses, right?
Or those losses, that's true.
So,
we're giving no investment advice, by the way, today. I will have a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode, but I will also have one here that we are giving no investment advice here. If you do anything we say, you will lose all of your money.
And simultaneously, maybe make a ton of money. Just kidding. No, you're right, though. We're not here to talk about this as an investment. I will say that
we're talking about the future and about how this technology is going to impact our lives and impact our kids. Again, that story where I spoke about this guy in my youth group who's like, all I want is crypto. What advice do you have? What's funny is like if kids came to us and said, hey, Dad, you know, I've saved a little bit, a couple $100, and I want to learn about investing in the stock market. We'd kind of be like, seriously. Attaboy, proud of you,
you'd
son or daughter.
And you'd have an you'd interning help them. With your financial advisor.
That's right. Yeah. And you'd be like helping them. Yeah. Now they come to you and say, hey, Dad, you know, I want to buy some Bitcoin. And you're like, what did you say? Like, right. Or, you know, I'm speaking generally. You don't.
Totally. Yeah. And I am. So I have a 17-year-old boy and like a 13-year-old daughter. And like, they know what I do. Their friends kind of know what I do. But they show up and they tell me the names. And so, and I've watched as I work with potential investors, them say, well, my son brought this name to me. And they're like, oh, I don't know. But why are we not just starting with cool?
Yeah.
What does it do?
Yeah.
And then get on the internet, let them explain to you and let them teach you and learn and let them get like, let them do some money to this, right? Like let them
experiment,
make some, lose some,
yeah.
but challenge them to actually tell you what they're spending money on. And if you do that, you might be kind of surprised. Like the first time they're like, yeah, I'm going to, this is a dog that was made into a coin and it's now worth $35 billion and I'm in. Like it's a good chance to talk about like fundamental value and what you're doing.
Utility.
But going back to kind of just my investment thesis is that this, like any technology, will get adopted and it will become more valuable, right? And without going too deep into that, let's not close kids off. Let's not close a generation off who knows how to invest. Not like my parents used to have to call a stockbroker and tell them to buy a certain stock. Well, then that evolved to ETFs and all these things. Like this is just an evolution of that,
yep.
Right?
It's a natural way of innovation.
Right? And so I want us to start learning from our kids. I want us to start not missing the opportunity, right? Like
your
example is great. We got it. Your kid just wanted to talk to you. Like that never happens. And you complain about them living in their devices. Well, if they're doing this in their devices, then they're going to pay for an upgrade of your retirement.
So I love it. Well, let me ask, I think what part of the reason, Paul, that people are nervous about it, this was my second question that I said 5 minutes ago, was this, first of all, I think what's hard is it's so intertwined with technology. We have an older generation or whatever that it's hard to grasp the new technology, the new world. I think that's how it is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to fight that urge a little bit, even myself, as this has come on strong. Like, you know, this is the future. You need to accept it. It's beholden on us to learn about it. But it's also this idea of anonymity. When your parents called their stockbroker, it's likely that they went to lunch with their stockbroker once a year, yeah. and they saw him at a basketball game. I'm making stuff up. They yeah. saw him at whatever community function. You're now doing business with these anonymous people that, by the way, some of them don't even have real names, right? Or they have one name, or they have a made up name. So I think this anonymity, while it's powerful, you said privacy was one of the four mm-hmm. core tenets, which is cool. It also can be a detriment, right? Or a barrier. How am I thinking about that wrong? Again, I'm kind of right. trying to represent okay. the normal people out there, my average yeah. listener, so to speak.
That's a great question, Jeff, because one of the kind of ways you describe these networks are like trust, right? Yeah. So you can have trust in the software without trust in the counterparty, right?
Yeah.
So if, you know, when you do a normal transaction, like Venmo, right? Venmo supports yeah. changing money. Like you trust Venmo because they validate my account, right? Well, this is actually instantaneous trust because it wouldn't execute if you didn't have the asset that you had. Now you can be scammed and fooled and, yeah. and going back to your point, like we're scared because we haven't yet built the interfaces, right? Like the reason yeah. I was in crypto later, like 2014 is because I wasn't a computer technologist.
I love what you say. Sorry, 2014 was later. Yeah. By the way, the reason I have Paul on today is he has been doing like full-time crypto for like the last 7 years, people, which by the way, isn't a long time, but it's a long time in crypto, right? Because, you know, I mean, five years, maybe late to the very beginning.
Yeah, the crypto community would talk about OGs, and I'm not making an OG status, but I'm a traditional investor, right? Yeah. Oh, 5% of my money into something risky and
yeah.
then it becomes all of your money. And
but stuff. Also what the point was, I agree, very yeah. few OGs, you're very experienced. If you look across the entire population, I mean, this is what you've been doing kind of full time yeah. thinking about working on
I'll
for 7 years.
It's my passion. It's like what I read about in my hobbies. Like I was at an Iron Chef dinner last night and I was just sitting there kind of like, when can I talk about crypto? Right? People, so like, yes.
Did you work it in?
Yeah. People ask, but now I don't know. I have to make myself stop for my family's sanity. But my point is it's that exciting to me and it's that transformative. And I do think that your ability to kind of put aside fear, put aside kind of these preconceptions. Like I hope with Web3, we use better language. I hope we see that, guess what? 20 years into the internet, some of these big companies that have all your data, right? There's some problems that arise yeah. with that. And here we have Web3 that's kind of presenting some solutions. Mm-hmm. And I hope we have a better PR effect to that. And kind of going back to the regulation, I think this will always be an attack on power and invested interests. But I would encourage people to look at it from, you know, look at it from a historical perspective where tech has always had rough times implementing, right? And yeah. governments haven't dealt with it right. But if it's really better, then we adopt.
Yeah.
And I don't want us to have rose-colored glasses or to think that we're trying to subvert government. We're not. Like more capital, the better on-ramps is what's going to improve all of my investor situation, my own. But I don't think as an investor that we ever benefit through going down this rabbit hole of fear, right? Yeah. Like inflation right now is a big topic, right? Yeah. And I think it's real. I think we should plan for it. But I don't know that we want to go all in on fear.
Yeah.
And so that's,
yeah, I mean, that's part of the tenets of this podcast, right? It's like you move forward in faith without complete information. And we certainly don't have complete information here. This is a budding new technology. It's a budding new field that like we're all learning about. Yeah. Some are further along than others. And those early quote unquote pioneers will benefit, most likely benefit from that, right? There also will be some pioneers that get slaughtered, they get lost, that right. Lose a lot, everything or a lot of money. So there's a lot of risk in what we're talking about. But can I go back to the anonymity point?
Yes, sir,
I think sorry. Here's Paul. Is this what you were saying? I think this is what you're saying for the layperson. Basically, you were saying it actually makes transactions faster. Mm-hmm. Because I actually don't need to validate a quote unquote the trustworthiness of the counterparty. Because I can rely on the immutability of the transaction correct. Via the blockchain. Is totally. That correct?
Absolutely.
So the software validates the transaction. I don't have to figure out if, you know, if Paul's a man or a woman or, a, you know, who, it doesn't matter who Paul is or whatever.
Spoiler alert, man.
Okay, man. So. Gotcha. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, it doesn't totally. Really matter where Paul lives or who he is. The software will validate yeah. the transaction.
Think of markets. Right. Like if you read any classic economists, they talk about the roles of governments in establishing trust and institutions. Right. If you study development, you see that failed institutions destroy that trust. Right. So one of the reasons people are excited about crypto in the developing world is because they don't have trust in their banking system. Like there's a billion people here who are predator who the banking system makes is a predator to them. Right. And to their wealth accumulation. Right. And you even see that in the U.S. The demographics of people that adopt crypto are more skewed towards marginalized communities. Right. Like mm-hmm. Hispanics, African-Americans are on a percentage basis more adopting of this technology. Right. And yeah. so because financial institutions or any kind of these things that give rise are focused on profiteering and making money. And so they create that market. And as those institutions mature, we get that trust, right? Yep. But here we have an instantaneous settlement. Now, pros and cons, right? We onboard hacking risk and code risk, mm-hmm. right? But I've watched it mature and get better. And I've watched, and I think 10 years from now, it will continue to do that.
Have you guys heard of Under Your Bed? I bet you have by now. If you're listening to the Extraordinary Us podcast, I bet you've searched for it maybe and haven't been able to find it.
It's true.
Isn't that how life is sometimes? You just can't find constantly what you're searching for. Constantly searching.
Well, now you can.
Now we've been found. Under Our Bed is finally out. It's really there, people. So type it in right now. Search it up.
You're going to love it.
Look for it live. Subscribe and tell your friends. Can't wait to have you there with Jeff and
Sal,
providing the comedy relief. Good night, Sal.
Good night, Jeff.
Yeah, you talk about the dark corners. Again, I think this is another barrier to entry for a lot of people. Is like, I think it's fairly easy in DeFi land to lose some money, lose some tokens, some coins, you know, some value. But by the way, that exists in every economy, yeah, right?
Can confirm.
That exists in every kind of yeah. market or economy. Unfortunately, I mean, you wish you could root the bad people out as much as possible, and you try to, but like it's going to exist everywhere. But how do you avoid? Like, what advice do you give people that are concerned about kind of the dark, shadowy corners of crypto and blah blah blah? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I would start with kind of your basic kind of financial advice is like, when you don't understand, like
beware.
do money that you can afford to lose. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, but with that said, like it's becoming more to where this is going to be an investable asset class, and it already is. And part of my work is making it more of that. Right. But if you want to do it individually, like recognize it's a time suck. Recognize that you're going to have to learn a ton. And
you have no idea the time right. suck, by the way. When Paul says that, yeah. be prepared to spend a lot of time for a long time to be an expert for sure.
Well, our first meeting, I was just doing some simple things and you were just like, yeah, right. And now you're a lot farther along, yep. but that's what it's taken. Right. And yeah. I've gotten, probably, you know, someone got me into crypto yeah. and I've probably gotten 50 people on. And I've also put them in situations where they lost private keys and lost money. They've been hacked. So you need to risk manage your own activity in here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And I just had a conversation with the first investor that said, you're good. You're good with me. We don't have to keep, I love buy the dip, but you've bought it four times now. Like this is your allocation, right? But anyways, but it is fundamentally different from other tech innovations for all these socioeconomic things, right? Our financial markets right now, like I have a graduate degree in finance and economics. So like I'm sophisticated enough, but because I wasn't an accredited investor, I get closed off to all of these types of investments, right? So,
that's what regulation does.
But I can be poor and play the lottery, right? Yeah. So, but regulation could actually stop things like OneCoin that were just giant Ponzi schemes that stole $5 billion. So that's where I kind of push back on no regulation. Like, let's go after criminals. Let's establish standards. And I think the vast majority of, you have your early days hardcore libertarians that don't take this, but I think there's, I'm not that person. I think there's a role for government in this. And spoiler alert, people pay taxes who do crypto, right?
Like
the dark net Silk Road stuff is 2012.
Yeah.
It's been a decade. I don't know. It's evolving,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So let's go to one more, just definition. I think it's kind of a standing block, like you said, a foundational block, DeFi. Like people have probably heard, or they're starting to hear DeFi. You know, what does DeFi mean? Like, give us the Paul Weimer 101 definition of like what DeFi is, and help people understand that, if they've heard that term but don't feel really comfortable with it.
All right. Let me go back to some of our things we've covered. So let's start with traditional finance, right? Traditional finance relies on intermediaries to make markets, right? Like if you go to the stock exchange, there used to be a guy with a ledger and he'd write down, this person wants to buy, this person wants to sell, and he'd make a price, right?
Yep.
So that's traditional finance, and financial markets are based on these financial institutions that do that. So decentralized finance is kind of a broad, all-encompassing term.
Which is what DeFi stands
for. Correct.
Decentralized finance.
Yeah, so it's this broad, all-encompassing term for using blockchain technology to do financial transactions. And it really started on the Ethereum blockchain, where people started to program financial transactions. So, think of an auto pay at your bank, right? Well, what if you could do the same without needing a bank to do that? You write a series of code that says, look up an account, give it money if under these criteria. And that's really simple, right? But then it got more and more complex. And now, like, we own in our fund derivative protocols that do enough volume just by bringing together buyers and sellers of risk through these platforms, but we don't have a third party to do that. Now, the easiest example of the power of this that I think of is securities lending. And most people aren't familiar with securities lending, but basically if you have your stock certificates at a broker like a Schwab, a TD, Fidelity, they will actually take those stock certificates and lend them to a prime broker who will then use those to rent them out to like hedge funds to cover short positions and derivatives tradings. And so they're actually making money on the assets that you have, right?
Yep.
So here's our layers and layers
yep.
and there's support with that, right? So decentralized finance is basically saying now we have software to make those markets. So now if I own an asset, I can deploy it into decentralized finance and I can get a yield or a return because what I have is valuable. Other people can use that for other financial purposes, And this is where kind of the Wild West analogy gets, because you don't have regulation saying on what level can you do that. So you get people borrowing against their portfolio, you get, lots of margin trading. Whereas if you are in traditional financial markets, you couldn't do that, right? Yeah. There's rules. Well, now you don't. So when markets start to fall a little, all these people get wiped out. And but that's the volatility. So but taking a step back, decentralized finance is just at 10,000 feet, the ability of software to make financial markets, to bring buyers and sellers
together,
risk takers and sellers. And to give you an idea of the volume, right? So last year on Ethereum, there was over $1 trillion transacted on chain, right?
Yeah.
So this isn't nothing.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't your kids taking a punt on a Shiba Inu, right? Like this is legitimate financial value, right?
Yeah.
Secondly,
Shiba Inu, by the way, is another just coin, meme kind of coin out there. Keep going.
That's awesome. Yeah. Sorry. And then, you know, in Q2 of this year, there's $2.5 trillion that's transacted on Ethereum.
In just Q2?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Yeah. So there are, there is economic value occurring here. There's efficiencies and substance to these transactions, right? And if you think about, you know, part of my fascination with crypto comes from my finance background and the fascination with the roles of markets and the economic side of it, right? And now you have code doing a lot of these things, and it's super exciting.
Yeah. What, anything else on kind of the baseline technology or blockchain that you'd like to say? Because I'd like to spring us forward for the last couple thoughts.
Just that. To keep in, if you view it as a technology, you now have the right lens for assessing the whole space. If you think of it as a currency, like if I can have one takeaway from today, it's like there aren't 9,000 coins trying to become US dollars or Canadian whatever or Vietnamese dong. Like those things aren't happening, right?
Yeah.
So we...
Canadian shekels.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever it's called.
Looney Tunies.
Yeah.
So, but that's not what this is. If you think of it as a technology, then you start to form, like that really is your starting point.
It's a good lens to look through.
Totally. Yep. And then you can make way better decisions on how you approach the space.
Yeah. I really hope this is helpful for people. I know it's confusing. I know it can be a lot, even if it just, inspires one step, like to Google something and spend 10 minutes reading something. That's at least a good first step to start learning about the space. So you've mentioned NFTs a couple times.
Yeah.
Kind of bridge us maybe a little bit here to NFTs, and then I have a couple wrap-up questions.
Okay, yeah. So I love NFTs. I think what they announced was like the word of the year, but it's another one of these items that we're going to talk past if we don't really start with the base. And everyone, there's lots of definitions, but what I think about it as is like an asset that's unique and digital. Okay. So that can take on a wide variety of forms, but basically the non-fungible tokens is what it stands for. And the non-fungible just means that they are unique and have unique characteristics.
And they're digital. They're on the blockchain.
Totally.
They reside, quote unquote, live on the blockchain. These aren't, so to speak, physical objects, although there can be in real life value that comes with some of these, like the Bored Apes crew can throw a party and only allow you to come to the party if you have a Bored Ape. I mean, there's an example of in real life value, but these are digital assets or art that exist on the blockchain.
Right. Yeah. Totally. So let's take art, because this is what's really taken off this year, right? So the art market's $1.7 trillion. And
are you saying the entire art market or the
physical
art market?
World, right?
Love it. Yep.
Okay. And so now artists have this new medium where they can actually create art digitally and people can own it. But if you think about what art is, right, it's this cultural expression of value. It's this, you know, it's status. Lots of times people own it, right? And it's, You best understand NFTs if you start to understand communities, right? And what do communities value, right? And so things like clubs and status, right? If you've been to Tuscany, you saw two neighbors who built 400-foot towers just to show that they were cooler or richer than someone else. Well, NFTs are no different, right? There's status to them, and they're, you know, what you have as your profile picture on Twitter or on Discord kind of shows where you sit in this hierarchy, right? And so these are just social phenomenon that are translating to a different generation with different values. But if you think of an NFT as this unique digital asset that has those characteristics we talked about previously, right? But it's unique. And so, and it sits on a blockchain, so you don't have disputed ownership, right?
Yeah.
My daughter came up to me the other day with a YouTube clip that said, that basically showed someone copying and pasting a CryptoPunk that sold for X million, yeah, right? And she's like, why, you don't have to spend this? But that's not really what an NFT is, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can make copies
of a Mona Lisa.
Yeah, you can make copies of any piece of art. Yeah. You know, I have The Last Supper sitting to the right here. It's a copy.
That's not
that's not the real thing. Yeah, just to just to clarify. You know, and it's something that's meaningful to me, but it's a copy that's not worth much. Right. The original, obviously, is, you know,
totally
priceless.
And so,
so think of the point is, I'm trying to take your offline thinking, your physical world thinking, and trying to transform it into, into the metaverse, because right. I think actually NFTs become super valuable potentially. This is just a theory, Paul. I'm curious if you agree with it. But in 5 to 10 years, when the metaverse is alive and well and people aren't spending increasing time in this new digital world, I'll just say that's where NFTs, I think, maybe become really interesting. Because if you own a real CryptoPunk, it's like, this is the real, the original, and that adds value. Yeah. Come to my, where do the quote unquote cool kids, I'm just using quotes, hang out? Do they go to do they come to my house where I have the fake, you know, Last Supper? Or if they're invited to a party where the real Last Supper is or the real CryptoPunk is, where do they go? They go to where the real one is, right? The unique, the original.
So the best example that like kind of helps illustrate, like art, you got to think of art and collectibles as its own kind of asset class. Like, you were more interested in NFTs when we spoke 6 months ago than I was, right?
Yeah,
because I'm not a collector. I'm not into art, right? So it's not really my space. But I'll tell you what I am into: a digital representation of an ownership of anything that can be fractionalized, that can be financialized in a completely new way, right?
Yep.
Like, what if you had your art piece and you wanted to pledge that as collateral to get a loan? Like, there are people working on this right now. Right? And that's what's so exciting, right? So, and then to help you understand, I don't know, I remember like having a neighbor like 15 years ago who used to, he lived on his thing in his virtual world, and he was making money selling like weapons that he earned. But one of his big risks was he'd go meet someone in the game and they'd give him something else and they'd just have a bunch of guys there and kill him and take all his swords, right?
Like, this is real.
Literally happened to me maybe 15 years ago. I remember hearing, I'm like, that is crazy. He could make money. Well, this might not make sense to us, but there's 1 billion gamers in the world who NFTs allow them to solve that problem, that allow them to have scarce resources. And then I think it's worth noting that gaming is changing into this democratization, where why do we need a game manufacturer to tell exactly how many swords there are? What if we had a community that designed the game? And these are the play to earn games. And this is the next frontier that's going to pull people into crypto. So NFTs and art. And if you think it's JPEG, challenge yourself to take a step back, because I am no different than you. Like, when everyone in crypto has their story. I had 2 CryptoPunks in my wallet, ready to buy, because I thought my daughter might laugh and think I'm funny for buying them.
Yeah.
But I had to pay in Ethereum, and I wouldn't do that because I loved Ethereum, right? And so, like, there went $2 million.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you should have bought
them. And it was $1,000. So, but anyways, taking a step back, these are digital assets that can represent clear ownership and that can be fractionalized, can be financialized. And so that's why they're valuable. It is not too far distant in the future where a private equity portfolio could have a bunch of assets that they then mint an NFT that gives ownership or some sort of obligation or legal bear bond to those assets. And I can purchase them, right? And that's coming. And so...
Paul, this has been so fun. I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate your expertise. I was, enamored with what you were doing when we met a couple of years ago. It's been exciting to, step out of the governor's race, peer into the future here for the last couple of years. That's what I've been doing. That's why I'm bringing these episodes to you. But it can be scary, right? Like you talk about gaming. I think of Ready Player One, the movie, that could be scary to parents like you and I, to even older folks or whatever the case may be. This is going to be my last broad question because it's actually been over 50 minutes already, Paul. Can you believe, when you're talking crypto, time flies.
Seriously. Tell me about the last 7 years of my life.
Where have the last 7 years gone? End us on a positive note. Like, why are you an optimist? Again, a broad, open question that I want you to, why are you hopeful? Again, I think of Ready Player One with the container kind of jungles or neighborhoods where people are just VR'd into their headset like all day. I'm making stuff up. I think you talk about gaming, and I think that's scary to a lot of non-gamers. I'm not one, or people that, they value in real life experiences, and really obviously what we have in life are the connections we make, the relationships we have. That's what I think is transportable and beneficial to us in the very long term. So give it, why are you hopeful about the future with all this technology, with cryptocurrency, NFTs, everything else happening? Give us a positive view or a pessimist view, like where do we go from here, and take us away, Paul?
So I am positive because I believe in better systems lead better outcomes to people, right? And so if we make things more efficient, more accessible, and we're basically taking a bet on our people and our society. And I think this tech brings things closer to the individual, right? So I'm positive when, more of the money you make can directly flow to you. I'm positive when you can use technology to connect with people, and we can be less afraid of things like metaverses and virtual realities if we realize that people are establishing connection. I watch my kids game and build community, right? So I don't think we have to fear that. I do think we have to make some pretty important decisions as a society on what privacy means to us. We didn't talk about central bank digital currencies, but the ability of our government to make their own currency, which can track every single transaction we ever make. So we've got some big decisions there.
Yeah.
But I am excited that there will be someday something that contains all my information, an NFT that I can share with someone. If I want to,
you can flip them the NFT and they can.
Right. So I'm excited about these zero knowledge proofs that allow me to flash an ID that shows I'm 21, but doesn't have my vaccination record and my social security number with it too. Right.
Yeah.
And so this is a better world. I like a world where you control your own data and you get to monetize that. And that's what Web3 is bringing. There's plenty to be excited about that. Now, if you're down on the human race, we got some really powerful tools here to destroy it for sure.
Yeah.
But I'll take the humans.
Not to mention AI, right? But you're voting with the humans.
If you want to just kind of go down the rabbit hole, think of AI, robotics, and decentralized systems. Yeah. You're on your way.
Yes, you are. I'm going to ask one other question. Yeah, I lied. Give me the long view on, so we're in the midst. This is the end of December when we're recording, or middle. I don't know when we're at, but there's been a crypto kind of pullback pretty strong the last couple of weeks.
Sure.
And, give us the long-term view, your long-term view as an economist and as a guy who runs a crypto hedge fund. Mm-hmm. What's your long-term view of crypto?
So I have a medium-term view of a $10 trillion market capitalization.
What's the highest we've gotten to? Three?
Three
trillion.
Yeah. So.
And we pulled back now to 2-ish? I'm trying.
Yeah, just 2.1.
I don't follow this morning. Daily. But
actually, it's been a bad morning. So
okay, so maybe two. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that is my perspective. There's
got it. So the whole market go to 10 trillion. We're at 2 now.
But if I drill down to what gets me there, it's that these things that I want to own are getting more adoption, more usage, and are becoming more and more valuable for that reason as people start to use this. And so that's what leaves me kind of everything I do, when people invest in me, they're saying that they're wanting to invest in crypto. So I work on that assumption. And I think there's plenty of strong reasons to believe that, but it's also going to be a volatile, rough road. If you use price to kind of determine how much you want to be in this space, then you're going to have what we call in crypto lettuce hands, which means you wash out when things get scary. Like you can't hold on to these things. So take a long-term view, take some blue chip names and play around. It's great.
Paul Weimer, crypto enthusiast, good friend, great guy. Appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
Paul Weimer, thank you for coming on today. I just find it so fascinating to look forward to the future, to think of the future. The world is moving so fast right now. It's an exciting time to be alive. It also could be scary. I appreciate Paul coming on. I appreciate his expertise, again, from the London School of Economics and deep into crypto for the last 7 years. I hope this was helpful. I hope we defined some things for you that might have been helpful, and or if you're an expert already in the space or not a novice and know some things, I hope that there were some comments that were insightful and might spur further learning. Let me tell you what stuck out to me. Number one, overall, I love how he said that better systems should equal better outcomes. We all hope and pray that is what we are working to in our world today, in our country today. Hopefully, we're working towards better systems that will create better outcomes for more people. One of the thoughts that I've had going into the future is I hope that this future can lift more people out of poverty. I hope that it can strengthen the middle class around the world. And I think it could be, or I think it can, if we do it right. That's an exciting proposition, no doubt. Remember DeFi, software that makes markets. So instead of two kind of parties coming together to make a market, to people or groups or corporations, DeFi is decentralized finance that helps make markets. It helps match up people, create transactions, hopefully with less friction and cost. That would be good for all of us. And then lastly, I liked his simple definition of NFTs, which are non-fungible tokens. Unique digital assets. So again, look at my podcast studio. Look at your home. You might have art on the walls. You might collect art. This is unique digital assets or art that you own digitally. Again, the future is coming. It's an exciting time. I'm grateful for the guests that we've had like Paul that are helping to enlighten us going forward. I hope that you'll take a look. Dig in deeper in 2022. Look forward. Thanks so much for listening. This is Jeff Burningham signing off at the US Podcast.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the US Podcast with Jeff Burningham. Please help us grow by leaving a rating and review and subscribing at your favorite podcast platform. Also, tell your friends and share on social media. See you again next week.
Hey, Jeff.
What's up, Sal?
Have you heard about me jumping out of an airplane?
Did I hear about it? I was with
you. Oh, yeah, that's right. You were there.
Did you forget about me falling to my death with you?
No, I did not forget. But you can listen. If you have not heard about us jumping out of an airplane, you can listen to our podcast, Under Our Bed.
Yeah, and hear about skydiving.
And all sorts of other interesting and amazing and funny things.
Hopefully mostly funny, but we've also covered some important topics this season. You know, Sally's dad passed away, and we spoke about when someone you love dies. That's been something that's been on our mind, and we've been talking a lot about, you know, in the last several months, including even last night.
Yes, we have. And so listen in and hear funny and inspirational and interesting and sad and whatever you're in the mood for. We've got it. Under Our Bed.
Check out Under Our Bed with Jeff and Sal. We'll be there.
We'll be there.